Yo, 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 what's good? It's Bear in the building. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Queen Talk. Today's special guest is a graduate from Wichita State University, an advocate for underrepresented communities, specifically those in foster care, with also a special title holder of Kansas Miss Emerald City 2024, Courtney Price Dukes. Yeah.
So I am Courtney Price Dukes. I'm 24 years old. I am Black and my pronouns are she, her, hers, and I identify as queer.
Queer. I was just talking to my cousin who was on the podcast about the word queer, and how, like, you said you're 24, like, the younger generation is bringing that word back.
Yes.
So when you say queer, what does that mean for you when you say it? Identify that way?
So for me, I just feel like, again, like you said, we're bringing that term back. We're taking the power back with it. And also, I feel like it's a good umbrella term because I've noticed throughout my age that the labels keep changing for me. So instead of just continually changing my labels, I'm like, why don't I just have this one that encompasses pretty much all of it, right? Yeah. So that if I do change it, then I can still be under that term. Yeah. So yeah, it's about taking out the hate that was associated with it, and again, regaining that term and using it as one that is powerful.
Yeah. So when other people say that word, do you feel comfortable, like, you personally, like, with them saying, like, oh, she's queer, even if they aren't a part of the community?
I do, and I understand that people don't, because a lot of people use words, again, as venom, right? Yeah. So there is that negative connotation with the word. But for me, I just want to claim it, right? So.
And I like the way how you said that, is because, like, it's constantly changing for you. And I think as, like, the older generation starting to get to know, too, like, they've been identifying as this one thing. And only thing that they knew. Well, now, like, there's so much more information getting out there and stuff. It's like, am I this way?
Exactly.
Like, am I fluid? Like, it's opening doors for you to question that, like, for yourself, like, okay, maybe this is why I'm this way or whatnot. So I like that. I like the way you explain that. And so you're not originally from Wichita, right?
No, I'm originally from Kansas City, Missouri, and I moved here in 2017 to go to Wichita State. Those shocks. And then I said, they just can't get rid of me. I've been here. I've been here ever since. But I love Wichita. A lot of people, me specifically, thought it was gonna be like tumbleweeds flying around. But I was like, oh, this is a city. Like, this is really a place of possibility. So yeah, I love it here.
It is, once you get here to Wichita, it is like, I wouldn't go quite as say like city.
I mean,
but
you know, tumbleweeds.
There's definitely not tumbleweeds here. And I wanna, like, your passion is foster care. And I like, I know a little bit about your story because I did my research, you know. please give the little background of, like, why is foster care your passion?
Yeah. So foster care and adoption has always been a part of my life. So I was born to two biological parents that struggled with drug addiction. So immediately I was in the adoption system. I was adopted at birth. And in 2012, I reported some abuse that was going on in my household from a family friend that was living there. So I was put back into the foster care system. So I was at an age that I really understood how broken it is and just all the trauma that can come from being in the foster care system. So I made a promise to myself and I said, I'm going to use my story to help others. So that's what I've been doing, whether it was in speech and debate and, like, talking to judges in a room or on the stage as Miss Emerald City, just really amplifying the voices of foster youth.
Yes. And you really have. I've seen your TED Talks. Like, I've watched a couple of videos, and your passion does, like, stem from, like, you're speaking from experience. And what you've been through. And you said, like, you were adopted and then you were put back into the foster care system. So, like, how can you, like, do you want to go?
It's so messy. I'll go into it. I'm open. I'm like, your story has power, so I'm always open to share it. So yes, I was adopted by a single mother at birth. And as I was raised in that household, there was a family friend there, and I just suffered some abuse from that person. And because of that, and because of a lack of action from those in my household, I was put back into the foster care system. So while my adoptive mom stayed my adoptive mom, I was put back in the system and eventually got guardianship with another family. So they asked me if I wanted to be readopted by this family. But because I was at the age where I could really speak for myself, I said no. Like, I had that loyalty to my mom right? So I ended up getting guardianship with the family. So technically I'm still adopted by my mom.
And so was this all transpired in Kansas City? Mm-hmm. So your guardianship family, mm-hmm. You were 12, right? When mm-hmm. you, what was that like, that dynamic like?
I always want to preface by saying that nobody's perfect, yeah. right? So I don't yeah. want it to seem like I'm bashing anyone.
Right.
But so, like I said, I'm Black and mm-hmm. they were a Caucasian family, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So that already adds its layer of trauma,
right?
Right, yep. Because I grew up with certain ways that I was raised in a Black household. Mm-hmm. So then having to shift all that and then being a white household was something that was different for me.
Yeah.
They were also a Christian family. So I have my own personal religious beliefs, but I did not grow up Christian, right? Okay. So then also adding that on to me as well, it was just different. It mm-hmm. was very different because I'm in survival mode and then I'm being placed in a family that got a file with who I am, right? Yeah. So just trying to please them, but then also trying to deal with how I may never see my family again. It was just, it's traumatic.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And were you able to see your mother during that time?
Or? Yes, and that's why I want to shout out the family that I was with. They did allow me to continue contact with my biological family, which is not always the case, but I did, and I do still have contact with my biological family, and that is something that I truly think has shaped me mm-hmm. and allowed me to keep that culture intact.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So your adoptive mom, mm-hmm. were you able to keep contact with them as well?
Yeah. So my adoptive mom, unfortunately, she did pass away in 2019.
I'm sorry.
But thank you. But she was a superwoman. She adopted 7 of my biological siblings. So it wasn't just me. So
you're one of 14, right?
I have a lot of siblings. I have a lot of siblings. But that alone, the fact that she did that just already gave me that connection to them. And then also my foster family continuing to allow me to have that connection with them is something that was truly huge.
Yeah. So you were able to be with your siblings during this time as well. Like, mm-hmm. so during the process, you said 7 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Did they go to the second family with you too? So you were...
No. So a lot of them were older. Okay. So they were already over the age of 18, which is typically when one age is out of the system. Mm-hmm. So they didn't go. And then my other brother who was of age, he didn't go. So it was really just me. Mm-hmm. And that has its own bit of trauma to it. Right. Yeah. So like when I would go back to home visits and see my family, I'm like, oh, they're still together. And then there's me,
yeah,
you know? But then there's also that, for lack of better term, survivor guilt, where mm-hmm. I was getting different opportunities that they weren't able to get. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So it was just a battle within itself.
Yeah. And man, you're relentless. Just so, by the way, like, yeah, like you're pushing forward. Like,
I'm trying.
Yeah,
I'm trying.
Your story, like, this is gonna touch a lot of people. Like,
I hope so.
You're breaking through doors, and I want to like talk about you being with the family that was white by yourself. Yeah. Because I feel like there's a lot of adoptive parents here who might have yeah. children of color. Mm-hmm. And what were those barriers for you in that household?
Yeah. So they also did have two other kids, and one was adopted from Guatemala. And when I moved in, he was 4. And then they had a biological son, and I believe he was 1 when I moved in. But even just race aside, there was just a lot of differences, mm-hmm. right? So I am very introverted, which a lot of people don't see that because, you know, here I am speaking, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I am very introverted, and especially when you have that trauma on top of you too, you're just very reserved. Mm-hmm. But they were very extroverted, which that's okay, right?
Yeah.
But just that immediate personality difference was something that kind of shut me down too. Mm-hmm. But I will give them props again because they did make sure to like get my hair done and things like that. And again, make sure to ask questions to people that were around me in the community, but it's not always like that.
Right. Yeah.
I know many people that were in the foster care system, that people of color that were with white families, where they weren't able to get their hair done. They weren't able to have their voices heard. Mm-hmm. So I will say in that aspect, I was pretty fortunate.
Yeah. That's really good that, like you said, cause that doesn't happen often. Mm-hmm. And it's good that you did have that because yeah. it is important, like, for, and it's not just like Black and white families.
Right.
Like if you adopt a child from Guatemala, if you Hispanic,
yeah.
it's important for them to know mm-hmm. their culture and get that understanding.
Yeah.
So that's awesome that you yeah. did that. So did you age out of the foster care system, or and where did you go? Like, because you age out at 18. So you stayed with that family till you were 18?
Well, so I got guardianship. So they got guardianship of me. Mm-hmm. So after I was 18, there's technically no legality anymore, but we continue to keep contact just because they played a huge role in my life, mm-hmm, right? We didn't always agree, but they did a lot to help me become the person that I am today. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we still keep contact.
Nice. What was it like being a foster care kid in the system? Like, just like we said a little bit of it, just like being mm-hmm. with the wife, but just like more other aspects mm-hmm. of it that it might be like, what was it like for you?
It's hard. Mm-hmm. Right. And I talk about this a bit in my TED talk, that it's not like Annie, where you go moving with some rich man and mm-hmm. then all your problems are solved. No, it's hard. It's going into courtrooms and testifying against your family. It's being home and asking, am I ever going to see my family again? It's your judges and your social workers not talking to you because they're overworked. They have like 50 cases on them. Right. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is, again, that survival mode. You feel mm-hmm. like you're just going about your days not knowing what's going to happen, because for me specifically, I feel like there was a lack of communication. Mm-hmm. So it really just is this traumatic experience that I don't feel like a lot of people talk about, yeah. maybe because they just don't know, right? So yeah. that's why I want to be that person that says, here's what it is. Like, here's yeah. the reality of what so many people, there's 500,000 at any time people in foster care right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is a large amount of people. Mm-hmm. My mom does foster care kids, foster care, mm-hmm. and she's been doing it since I was like middle school. Wow. So, I know like what she has to deal with, like mm-hmm. with the system and stuff, but, and just like the girls, like having bags and leaving with, like, yeah. They're always on the go.
Yeah.
So it is, if you aren't a part of the world, you definitely just like out of sight, out of
exactly.
mind. So you being that representation, giving that awareness is really needed, for sure. So you're doing awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
You came to Wichita when you were 18 or 17, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So you got a scholarship mm-hmm. to come here full ride.
Yeah.
But I always thought that you get a scholarship if you're in the foster care system. Is that not true? Is that false information?
So that's also something that a lot of people don't know, is that if you are in the foster care system, there are scholarships and programs to where you can go to college for free, but people don't talk about it.
Yeah.
So then those in the foster care system don't know about it, so they don't utilize it, right?
So you didn't know about it?
I personally didn't know about it.
Okay.
But it worked out. I still got a scholarship.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I personally, like, I don't remember anyone ever telling me that was yeah. an option.
Yeah.
But here's me telling people that is an option for, I don't know if it's every state, but I know that there are certain locations that it is an option.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's one of the very few benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But people, like, you didn't know. So getting yeah. that word out there that mm-hmm. there is opportunity. Cause like you said, when they age out,
yeah.
I seen like in your TED talk, there is no preparation,
none.
For that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were, what did you do all this on your own? Did your family help? Or?
My family did help. Again, I'm gonna keep saying it. I was fortunate.
Yeah.
I was fortunate that they truly did care about me and care about my success. But there are some people when they age out, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, they're out the door to fend for themselves, right? Right. And there are those good caseworkers that will sit down with you and tell you about resources that you have. But then there's some that are just like, here's your file, go.
Yeah.
Right? So it's case by case.
Yeah. Man. Well, like you said, they are overworked. Mm-hmm. I know some friends that are like a part of that world. And it is a lot. There's a mm-hmm. lot of children in the system.
Yeah.
And like, they could have like 30 to 40 kids mm-hmm. just on their caseload.
Yeah.
So it is a lot. So if you want to be a case manager, a caseworker, they're probably always hiring.
Yeah, no, literally. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely needed. So you got here in Wichita, Kansas. Mm-hmm. And like, what made you be like, okay, I want, this is my story
mm-hmm.
and I want to let everyone know I'm going to use this yeah. to my advantage. Like, what got you to that point?
So honestly, I feel like it really started in high school. So I did speech and debate,
okay.
and specifically I did original oratory. So that's where get to write a 10-minute speech about any topic of your choosing and you present it to judges.
Okay.
And initially I started with just like adversity. So just a broad spectrum. This is what adversity is. But I said, no, I want to make it specific and talk about my story and talk about the foster care system. And as I did that, not only was I educating so many people about things that they didn't know about, but I also was finding healing through that. Because I feel like as foster youth, a lot of us are used to bottling things in, right? So it was a release. And I was like, this is so powerful to be able to take back that pain that I faced and turn it into power. And ever since then, like, I've been on the TED Talk stages. I've done Miss Kansas for 3 years going on now. I've done presentations in my communication classes because nobody has your story.
Right.
Right. Yeah. That is one thing that is specifically yours. What are you going to do with it? Mm-hmm. You have the chance to just let it be and not use it, or use it and help so many people along the way. And I decided I want to help people.
Yeah. And that's awesome. And I feel like you have been, I've been seeing you around Wichita a lot.
Oh, I'm everywhere.
And so it's really good, like, be that representation. Yeah. And there's a lot of resources that people don't know about.
Absolutely.
So it's definitely that, and you're doing a wonderful job doing it. And like you said, stories are like really important. It's the number one thing. And I feel like that's a good way of connection. Like, people understand more during storytelling. And that's why Queen Talk was like, when people understand the queer community and just, we're human. Like, there's no different.
Exactly.
Like,
we
just love differently.
Right.
So,
yeah.
The storytelling is important. And so during all this, that your adversity that you're going through, like, when did you know, like, I'm a part of the community? Like, this is...
I knew in middle school.
Middle school?
Yeah, I knew in middle school. But I was a part of a generation where we'd be like, no homo. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, say that all the time. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, no, I really think you're, like, I really think you're cute. But, like, I always had that feeling that I knew that I was attracted to those that weren't necessarily my gender. And it was... it was hard for me, especially when I entered the foster care system, because again, those that I was placed with, they were very religious, right? And there's nothing wrong with it. I respect those who have different religions, different beliefs. What I don't respect is when you use that as a weapon.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why I held it in for so long. I went to a little private Christian school for high school. I was I was like a small group leader, right?
You know
what I mean? So, like, I was the face of, I don't want to say this religion, but, like, in my school, like, I was the main person that a lot of people would look at. And that's not to say that you can't be queer and be Christian, because I believe that you can.
Yeah.
But in my mind, and based off of what so many people had told me, I felt like I couldn't. So I held it down until I was in college. I remember it was my freshman year of college, and there was this girl, and I was with my friend, and I said, that's the one that would change it all for me. I kid you not. I could tell you exactly where I was standing. I was like, I would come out for her. And we ended up dating.
Okay.
Right. And I came out to people. Right.
Yeah.
And the response wasn't always great. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of comments that were religion used as a weapon against me. And that's why I still kind of struggle with religion to this day. Mm-hmm. Right. I love God, but the whole religion thing is just tricky for me right now. But then there were the supportive people, right? Mm-hmm. The chosen family that a lot of people say. And that's why I live out and proud now today. Just because, again, you never know how you representing your life out and proudly can help somebody else.
Yeah. And I think you're a unique representation of the community too, because, like, you're a femme. So not many people might think you're a part of the community.
Yeah.
So do you feel like you've, like, of course you were in, like, the private Christian school, but do you feel like you heard things being, like, straight passing that they felt comfortable in saying around you because they didn't think you were a part of it?
Yes. And then also, because right currently I am in a heterosexual viewed relationship. So I'm in a relationship with a man. And a lot of people see that as, oh, well, then you can't identify as anything and a part of this community because you're dating a man. I'm like, oh, don't get it twisted. I said, listen. And he knows that. I even expressed that to him. I was like, should I go on this podcast? Because do you think people are going to see me as credible? Like, it was something that I was really battling with. He was like, Courtney, do you find women attractive? I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. But I think that's also a part of it. She was like, sometimes I feel like those in the community are afraid of other people in the community and what they have to say. And I was like, it's true. Mm-hmm. Because initially I just identified as bisexual. And you do see a lot of hate from those in the community for those that are bisexual. So it's just been interesting. It's been an interesting journey.
And like you said, there's coming from people inside of the community. And what you said earlier, just like being that umbrella of things, and people are realizing like it's not one way. Or this way. And I feel like more people are starting to understand that now. And it's so interesting you said, like, you were, are you supposed to be? Like, yes. Like, you are a part of the community. I feel like if you're interested in the, in, or any of the of the community, like, you are for sure welcomed here and in this community. And that's something, like, within we have to work on ourselves, too. Because you are right. There is hate within it, too. So... yeah, you're welcome. You're definitely welcome. And but do you feel like you've had you've heard things from like straight people like with being like in those areas around that? Like, do you feel like you've heard comments and stuff like that?
Yeah, and like you said, I am majority of the time femme presenting. So I'll hear things like you're too cute to be, you know, to be queer, or it'll be the complete opposite and people will sexualize it. Which is a problem in and of itself. But yeah, I feel like for femmes, like femme presenting, sometimes it's easier because it's kind of like you have the ability to hide that if you don't want to come out, rather than someone who's mask presenting, because people automatically assume, even if you're not a part of the community, if they just assume you are. So for me, I wouldn't say that I've gotten majority of the comments that those that I've hung out with and that present in a different way have. And I guess you could say that's, I'm fortunate for that. But also I feel like no one should get those comments because it's all, honestly nobody's business unless you want to share that. You know what I mean?
Do you, I know you're like in a relationship with a man now, but like before, do you feel like it was hard dating being femme presenting? Like,
Oh yes. And I would say specifically because the girl that I was dating was also femme presenting. And a lot of people just didn't automatically connected. So if they would see us like holding hands, be like, oh, they're friends, blah blah. But then if you see us, you don't kiss, they're like, wait, something's not adding up. And then also it was an interracial relationship. She was white. So that also added its own barrier of like, wait, so you're in a queer relationship and you're in an interracial relationship, and like people, they couldn't wrap their minds around it. So I would say that was very difficult. On the flip side of like when I was with someone who was mask presenting, like people just accepted it more. So it was
interesting.
It was very interesting to realize that, to be in a spot where I was like, wow, I don't get as many comments when I'm with someone that's mask presenting, but when I was with a femme, like people were so baffled by it.
That is interesting. I always like wonder, like when I was single, like I didn't know who was part of the game. Like, I'm not going for mass. So it's like, who do you... I just talk to everybody.
Yeah, I'm like, who do I like?
Who do I... Like, anybody who I think is attractive. It is what it is. Either you might like girls.
We'll see.
I'm going to shoot my shot.
Yeah.
But that's so interesting that you say that. But yeah, so... let's see what else we got. You, right now you are, after, during your time at Wichita State University, you were like involved in quite a bit of things.
Yeah, I was heavily involved. I always say that was my time of burnout. Like, I feel like that's when things just really hit me. Because, again, I feel like this comes from being in the system. You want to distract yourself from the problems. So here I was thinking I was coping with a lot of things, but I was truly distracting myself from the real issues. Because I was keeping myself busy all of the time and just being involved. It was all great things I was involved in. I loved it. But I had to sit back and ask myself, why am I really involved in a lot of this stuff? Is it to advocate for the cause that they want to advocate for? Or is it just something else that'll keep my mind busy? You know? But a lot of those opportunities in college allowed me to be where I am today. So, for example, I did the Miss Black and Gold scholarship under Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. And that just allowed me to meet someone in the community, a very powerful man in the community, Joseph Shepherd, who is now on the Miss Kansas board. Mm-hmm. And he was my first director for Miss Kansas. And he was one of the people I talked to about doing my TED talk. So just every little detail mattered, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Every little organization that I was in had a purpose. Do I suggest getting overly busy? No. Please don't be like me. But I would say to make sure that you are plugging yourself in and networking with those that have the potential to put you in spaces that you want to and need to be in.
Yeah. And I feel like you found yourself a lot. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, coming out, you had your first partner, you're yeah. in these organizations, and that's obviously where you started mm-hmm. doing the Miss Kansas things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What wanted you to be a part of that?
Like, so if you would have asked me when I was a kid, I would have been like, no. Like, no. I've always had like big dreams for myself, but yeah. never did I think that I would be in pageantry. And that's for many reasons. Yeah. I didn't think I had the look. I didn't think that I just didn't think it was for me.
Yeah.
But whenever my mom passed away, I made another decision. I said that I am going to continue to do things that are going to make her proud. I'm going to continue to do things that are going to get me out of bed, because I was in a real bout of depression and anxiety during that moment when she passed away. So I wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to stay in it and sulk mm-hmm. in it. So that led me to say, what's something different that I can do? Yeah. I've loved being on stage. I did theater in high school. So I was like, okay, I'll do this pageant. It's kind of yeah. like being on stage. And then if I don't win, I'll get like, you know, great skills along with it. And I did. And I made great friendships. And after that year, I got second place, and that qualified me to go to Miss Kansas, but I didn't that first year because I was really hard on myself. And again, okay. I was like, I don't have the look. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a plus size, dark skinned black woman who wears mm-hmm. braids. Mm-hmm. And I was like, they're not going to want me. Mm-hmm. But Joseph Shepherd, he was like, no, you have a story. Mm-hmm. You have something that you are passionate about and that you can advocate for. You need to be in these spaces. And when he said that, it clicked. Yeah. So I was like, oh, I'm coming back. I'm coming back. And I've been back ever since, because awesome. Again, it goes back to young Courtney. I'm going to use my story to help people.
Mm-hmm. And that representation. Absolutely. Like,
listen.
Did you see anybody that looked like you during that?
You see very few people. For the Miss Black and Gold Scholarship, there were heavily people of color that were in that. But when you get to Miss Kansas, especially like the first couple years, there is that disparity, right? And that's why we're trying to increase that diversity that we're bringing in. Mm-hmm. But it was hard to know that yeah. I'm one of very few that look like me. But then I had to flip it. I'm mm-hmm. like, but now little girls in the audience get to see themselves, right?
Exactly.
So again, that's another reason why yeah. I keep coming back. I'm like, they need to see that yes. they can be someone bigger than, like, a lot of times people that look like me are represented in media as like the ghetto black girl, mm-hmm. you know, the loud friend. I'm like, oh no, honey, you could be a powerful woman that advocates for what you care about. Right. You could be that person that goes out in the community and shows that, listen, I want to give back to those that gave to me, right? So it's powerful that you and like myself and so many other people on that stage have the power to change the narrative.
Yeah. Do you find yourself expressing like your sexuality like in those spaces too, like
mm-hmm. yes. So especially the first year, I was still with my girlfriend at that time and people knew. Okay. And then also in interviews, because a lot of the questions I get about the foster care system are, do you believe that those that are part of the community should be able to adopt and foster it? And that's mm-hmm. where I'm like, well, as someone who's a part of that community, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it does allow me spaces to share who I am and be completely open and free mm-hmm. about that. So that's also really cool that, like, again, I get to be completely authentic to who mm-hmm. I am.
And you don't feel like you have to hesitate that authenticity at all.
The authenticity. sometimes I do, but then I say, I don't care.
Yeah.
Right? I feel like everyone has the right as a human being to be who they are. Mm-hmm. And if someone doesn't like that, that's on them.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, there have been spaces where I've been hesitant, but then I'm like, at the end of the day, what is my why? Yeah. I'm here to advocate. I'm here to represent. So it goes back to that.
Yeah. So when you came out, mm-hmm. was your guardian, what was that relationship with your guardian family?
Again, let me preface, nobody's perfect. But it was hard because religion was used against me in that moment. Mm. And also I was going through, again, that heavy depression and that heavy anxiety at that moment. And because of the spaces that I was raised in, I thought that God was punishing me. So I thought that he had given me this depression and anxiety because I was a part of the queer community. And that's the reason that I came out to them in the first place, is because I just couldn't stop crying all day. And I was like, I like girls and I feel like God's punishing me. And that that's how it was. That was me coming out. And we didn't speak on it that day because I went to the hospital because I was having a panic attack. So we didn't speak on it that day. And then it kind of like died down. But then when I brought it up again, like, hey, I want to go see my girlfriend, that's when like they came down with these notes and they were like giving me scripture and was saying you can't pick apart the Bible and things like that. And again, I respect people's religions. Have your religion. But at that moment, I just needed someone to say, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I was already beating myself up. I was already feeling like God was punishing me. And like, I don't know who everybody else serves. But my God loves me how I am. Amen. Right. I was like, I don't know who everybody else serves, but my God loves me exactly who I am. And I just needed someone to say that God loves you and I do too.
Yeah.
That's it. I didn't need to feel like I was being lectured at that moment. And in that moment, they felt as if they were doing the best they could. They thought they were protecting me. So I've had to sit back and say, they've never wanted to hurt me. Like, I truly don't believe that their intention has ever been to hurt me. I think that in their minds, it was helping me and trying to lead me into the direction in which they feel is correct. Yeah. But it's just not what I needed. And it gave me a resentment towards them for a very, very long time. So that was very hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry that was your experience, especially like everything that you've gone through, just like you needing people in your corner.
Yeah.
So you said you had found family that, that became your corner. Did you like build like a community here in Wichita for yourself?
Yeah. So, in Wichita, especially when I was in college, I was out. Like I was out in Wichita, but I was still closeted in Missouri, right?
Yeah.
But I did have that community that just made me feel so safe with being who I was, because I still in the back of my head had that like, oh, you're going to go home to Kansas City and then they're going to be, you know, judging you, blah, blah, blah. But the people that I had surrounded myself with, that's why I'm always saying it's so important, the environment you create around yourself. Mm-hmm. They made me feel so safe. Specifically, at Wichita State, there is the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, and I found myself in there a lot. Mm-hmm. There's not only adults, but the students in there just make you feel like it's okay to be who you are. You're attracted to a woman, you have a girlfriend, okay.
Yeah.
What do you want to go get for lunch? You know what I'm saying? So, like, it wasn't this big topic of discussion. It was just, that's who you are.
Yeah.
And that's just what I needed.
Did you ever have that conversation with your mother? And how did that go?
Yeah, I remember it very vividly. So I had actually just picking her up from the hospital, and I was me, her, and my aunt, and we had stopped at Walgreens, and my mom was in the back seat, and I turned around to her, and I was like, Mom, I have something to tell you. And I was like, I think I like girls. And she was like, that's okay. But like, I had built it up to be this huge thing in my mind of her, like, you know, you just have this expectation of how people are going to react.
Mm-hmm.
But she was just like, that's okay. You know, you like who you like.
Yeah.
So, but that was just so beautiful. And then we just moved on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was like, wow. Like,
did you tell her after you had that conversation with your guardians too?
No. So I told her and my biological siblings first, just simply because while they have their own relationship with religion, they're just not as openly religious as my guardian family. So I just felt more comfortable in a way telling them. So yeah, I told them all. It was like months before I told my guardians.
So you did have like that, just like good reassurance. Like, I'm glad that was your first time like saying that to your guardians. Like, and it wasn't with the ones who weren't accepting of it. That makes it a little better. Like knowing like, it's okay if you don't accept it. My biological family, like they, I told them I'm open to them.
Mm-hmm.
And your siblings were everyone.
Yes, which is so crazy to me because like stereotypically you see that in the Black community, a lot of times it's more looked down upon.
Mm-hmm.
But like, no, my siblings, like everybody was just like, okay, are you happy? Are you safe? Cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, that it was a very good experience with them.
Now there's 14 of you. Is there another one a part of the community?
Or are you Nobody has.
I feel like it's like one in. I'm the
black unicorn. But nobody has openly expressed being a part of the community. That doesn't mean that there's not. As of now, I'm the only one who has like been open and open about it.
And do you still have those connections with them? Are they still in Kansas City?
Oh, yeah. Me and my sister, her birthday was yesterday. Like, we're really close. Yeah, we're a really close family. Of course, like... I'm going to get emotional. The system in life affects people differently. So, a lot of my siblings have taken different routes in life, whether that be battling with addiction, battling with incarceration. There's just a lot that's mm-hmm. going on, and I take it back to the effects of trauma, mm-hmm. The effects of unresolved trauma, and it's just been hard, and it goes back to that guilt of I'm doing things that they don't have the opportunity to do, mm-hmm. right? So I love my siblings to death. I want nothing but success for them because they all have so much potential, and there's nothing worse than unused potential. But the way the world is set up and the way that trauma affects the mind and actions, it's just, they're trying to figure it out, you know? But I'm still very close to them. I still talk to them. I want to help them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But it seems like you're close with your sister, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's
like
good.
My twin. That's me and my twin. And then
That's good that, like, the system didn't, like, separate you guys completely, mm-hmm. though, too. Like, your guardianship family, like, they were able to, like, keep you connected.
Yes.
So that is really good. That's mm-hmm. really nice. Now, currently, you are working with younger youth.
Yes.
Like, I know your passion's, like, with the foster care, but you're mm-hmm. with Rise Up for Youth right now, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
How is that? Do you like?
It's good. Yeah. I was like, can you imagine? No.
I've seen Rise Up for Youth in the school, like mm-hmm. some of their events and whatnot. What's your role at Rise Up for Youth?
So I serve as the official term as a youth champion, but I just say mentor. So I go around to, I believe we're in 7 of the high schools in USD 259, so the Wichita School District. And we just go into the schools and we talk to them, whether it's about, hey, what's going on in your life, what's going on in school, mm-hmm. or if it's specific life skills. So mm-hmm. we talk about financial literacy, we talk about healthy relationships, things like that. And then we also have those out of school events. So we just went to Tanganyika the other day, but mm-hmm. it just gives them an opportunity to have other alternatives to not engage in things that could be dangerous.
Right. Yeah.
Because let's talk about the numbers of shootings that are going on in youth today. Let's talk about the high rate of teen pregnancies that are going on today. So we want to show them that there are different routes in life. It doesn't have to be you go to a 4-year university after high school. You could go to a trade school. You could be a cosmetologist. Like, we just want to show them that they have that potential and they can use it for so much good. So I love it. I love my girls that I get to serve. I was just talking to one of them about joining the pageant. So, no, it's a good opportunity. And again, it allows me to continue to use that story to pour into people and tell them, listen, this is what I did. You don't have to do this. You know what I mean? There's other things that you can do.
Yeah, for sure. Do you feel like Rise Up for Youth is inclusive with like the LGBTQ community too?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we have multiple members that are a part of the community in there. And I feel like, again, that's why I'm so blessed to be a mentor in that community, because they get to see that in me. They get to see that I am open about it and I will talk about it. So sometimes you just need to know that somebody is there for you, that you have that safe space. So I think that's allowed a lot of our youth to feel more comfortable and be willing to come to these events and come to these sessions because they know they're not going to be judged.
Shout out to Lynn and David.
Gilkies.
They really like that program that they started. It really is good for the community.
Absolutely.
The stuff that's going on with the youth right now, It's definitely needed to like steer their mind on other things. So when you started working with youth, what was like your way of how do you express yourself to them? Like what does that look like? I mean, because you're still young too. So
listen, I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm still trying to figure it out. Do you mean in regards of like how do I express being a part of the community? Whether that be wearing a shirt that just says pride, like a lot of times in offices I'll have like a little pride flag, or I'll wear like a pride pin. It's little things like that show I'm a safe space. You can come talk to me if you need someone to sit with. Like, You know, it's just little things like that. Or I'll just openly be like, so when I had a girlfriend, you know, like things like that. Yeah. And showing that you don't have to have shame in speaking about it. Because I know that that's a common emotion for those that are part of the community is that shame. So just making sure that I have those little details. For a while, I had the pride flag in my car, but I had to clean my car out. So it's not there right now. But like,
oh, you're the rainbow's coming out.
Listen, listen. But like, it's just because it was just a quick thing for people to see to be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a good way.
Exactly. So quick things like that. But you don't always need to be like wearing rainbows to show that you're a part of the community. There's so many different ways. Even if it's just aligning yourself with people and showing that you'll talk to everyone. So right, not being judgmental, saying that I don't care what you believe in. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat. I don't care if you're black, white. Come sit with me. Let's have a conversation. You know what I mean? So just showing them through my actions is huge.
Yeah. That is like, it doesn't take much. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, wearing the rainbow shirt. Yeah. Just like little things like that. It does show like you're an ally.
Yeah.
I know like finding the house I wanted to live in, I seen a pride flag going by. I was like, okay, this community is welcoming.
Yes,
like,
yes.
And I'm not one that has a pride flag outside my house.
You don't need to. Yeah.
But I just feel like that is a good way of just like showing I am an ally.
Absolutely.
This is a safe space. So that is a good way to show it.
Yeah.
Where does life take Courtney in that? Like, you're Rise Up for Youth right now, but
you tell me. please somebody tell me where to I mean, as of now, I'm just gonna continue doing my advocacy. I just hope to continue to be in spaces where I'm positively impacting people. That's all I can really ask for. I don't have a specific necessarily goal for myself. I do want to start up a nonprofit that has to do with giving foster youth like communication skills, because I feel like once I learned communication skills, that really changed a lot for me. So that's something that's one of my goals. But as far as where is life going to take me, I guess we'll see. Stay tuned.
And your fun fact was you're a writer, like you're a script writer, and didn't you just like get flown out and all the good stuff in LA?
yes, I did. So Kids in the Spotlight is an organization in Los Angeles, California, and they work with foster youth to help them kind of heal and tell their stories through script writing and film. So I competed in their screenwriting competition and I won.
Yes.
So I got to fly out to LA and actually act in my
I was the actor.
I was the writer, I was the actress, and I got to fly out again to see it on like the big screen, and there were like celebrities there. I was like, oh my goodness. Like, what is I had to sit down. I was like, this is my life. Like, when you really sit down and see like all the trauma that I went through, and then like here I am in a room with celebrities watching myself act, like, oh, life is crazy. Life is crazy.
You probably just bawling.
No, I'm a crier. I'm a crier, and I have no shame in it.
So is the movie out? Like, is it online?
So I do have it. And I am going to hold a screening of it. I'm not sure of when. But yes, I'm going to hold a screening so people can see it. It specifically talks about dealing with mental illness and specifically dealing with intrusive thoughts. And I feel like that's an area that's not tapped on enough, and if it is, it's like people joking about it, like, oh, I'm following my intrusive thoughts. I'm like, no, let's like really talk about how intrusive thoughts can like bring you down and make you feel like you're like losing yourself a little bit. So it was very fun. It was very fun to do. And I'm excited for the community to see it.
I'm excited. It's like, when I heard it, I was like, wait, I was like, where's the movie
where
at?
Where
like,
is it?
That's exciting. Please let me know when that's going to be out, because I will definitely promote that for
you. Thank you.
I'm here for it. Awesome that you were selected and you won. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah.
And you're in musicals too. Like,
yes. Listen, so I really, I'm everywhere. Like, I'm like, what don't I do at this point? I just sit down. But I recently got re-involved with theater last year. So I did it in high school, but then I kind of took a bit of a hiatus during college. But last year I was in Dreamgirls at Crown Uptown.
I seen. It was lit. It was good.
Thank you.
Y'all did amazing.
Oh my goodness. It was a beautiful cast.
Yes.
Still in contact with them. And like, just, it was so healing to be back on stage and really show my passion for musical theater too. Because I feel like a lot of people know me as the pageant girl, or like, you know, advocating for foster youth. But when they saw me on stage, you're like, oh, you were hiding something. I was like, just a little bit. But no, I truly love musical theater because I feel like it's another healthy coping mechanism for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, y'all did amazing.
Thank you. It was really good.
Do you plan on doing some more?
I hope so. I need them to book me. Yeah. I was like, book me.
Do you sign up?
You have to audition. I recently auditioned, and then they are currently making the calls to tell you if you have been selected to be in their season. So I'm waiting.
In the season of?
So I auditioned at Roxy's. Okay. So that's one of them. And then I believe the Forums auditions are coming up. So I'm going to audition there. Nice. I auditioned for MTW. So I'm just putting myself out there and just waiting for the call.
Hell yeah. That's what you got to do. I feel like you've been putting yourself out there since you're 17. Like, that's very bold and courageous of you to just... Thank you. And move to a whole new town. Don't know anybody.
No family here.
Like,
yeah.
Did you stay? You stayed in the dorms. Like, you had the full.
Yeah.
That's. Yeah.
It was hard. It was hard. But sometimes the best things are on that other side of fear.
Mm-hmm. What resources did you have, like, when you came here by yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Where did you turn to? I know you were in the DEI office. Like, you worked there. Like, every position.
You know. Every position I said take me. But that really was my place. When you have people like Alicia Sanchez, Danielle Johnson that are in that space every single day that will speak truth into you and speak life into you, those are my people. They made sure that I would have resources. If I was feeling sad or I was telling them things, they knew who to point me to. And some of the most impactful people I met in that office. So I'm telling you that there are spaces for people that feel like they are underrepresented, that feel like they are underheard. You just got to find them.
Yeah, definitely got to find them. Mm-hmm. What are your final thoughts for anybody? What do you want to leave the audience with today?
I've said it multiple times throughout this, but your story has power. You deserve to be who you are as a human being. You have the right to be yourself. And don't let anyone tell you that you can't be yourself, because no one can be you like you can be you.
That's awesome. No. Is there anything, though, that you wanted to, like, tap into and talk about specifically of your coming out story?
I don't know if there's anything specific that I want to talk about. I just want to say, don't automatically assume that the response is going to be negative. Because a lot of times, while that is true, there are those people that will open their arms to you and treat you with love and grace and acceptance. So, again, just know that you have the right to be who you are and don't automatically assume the worst of people.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Thank you so much for being a part of Queen Talks Podcast. Like, this is awesome. I feel like we leveling up around
here. Come on, level up.
We got Miss Emerald City in the building. And I just feel like I'm very grateful to have you on here. Your story is very powerful. I hope that it inspires people. And maybe someone that was thinking about being a part of the foster care system, now maybe they get involved in it and see, like, there's a lot of kids that could use help.
Yeah.
And hopefully, if there is a foster kid in this and they're watching this, they see that there's resources out there. And you're just a good representation.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for coming and joining me on Queen
Talk.
Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Queen Talk. Make sure you guys follow, subscribe, like, comment, all that good stuff. Comes out weekly, so just set your notifications so you don't miss it. Family, friends, strangers, love. Be nice. Hey.